And welcome to the Recruitment Marketing Podcast. My name is Victoria Rush. Here, I'll be talking to marketing leaders in the recruitment industry, discussing their careers in recruitment, passions for marketing, and the challenges and successes they have faced along the way. My aim for this podcast is to share the opinions and insights of a variety of experts from across the recruitment marketing landscape. I'll be discussing their experiences and learns while building recruitment brands around the world. Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Recruitment Marketing Podcast. This week, I'm joined by Adam Gordon, co-founder and CEO of Candidate ID. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me, Victoria.
Please, could you start by telling everyone just a little bit about yourself and, of course, Candidate ID?
Yeah, sure. So I started in recruitment in 1999, placing part-qualified and newly qualified accountants. And I did it for 3 years. I then moved into a recruitment marketing business, Havas People, then spent 3 years in consulting with PwC and started my own company in 2009, which was a social media services and kind of recruitment sourcing business. And in round about mid-2015, I was talking to a big pharmaceutical company who told me that of the people that they were hiring through LinkedIn, 70% of them had already been on their ATS at the point they approached them. And I thought to myself, hold on, you've got around 100 people internationally spending their time identifying people of which 70% are already on the ATS. That sounds like a real inefficiency to me and something that we can attack. And so I thought, we'll create a service that's all about nurturing candidates. And then I realized that this would be a much better opportunity if we could automate it. So we decided to become a technology company and created Candidate ID.
I was actually about to ask you how did it happen, but that pretty much summed that up for me. One of the key things I really wanted to get into with you today was about how a system like Candidate ID can help marketers in recruitment. I've said it before that we're often put on PowerPoints or events or social media, and you just smile at that. Yeah. And that is a piece of marketing, that is a piece of a puzzle, but in recruitment there is far more to what those singular things can actually create if you apply them correctly to a system similar to Candidate ID, or there are many others. But what is it that marketers can really do with a system like that?
So I think that the recruitment world is a little bit behind some other industries in terms of how marketing is positioned.
Isn't it just? Yep.
Yeah. And if you go into other really dynamic industries, such as technology, you'll find that marketing is positioned as being central to the performance of the organization. You'll find that everything marketing does is measured, and it's a performance function. It's not about making things look nice. It's not about finessing documents, and it's not about things that it maybe was 20 years ago when I started my career. In industries like technology and financial services, marketing have got targets which are associated with their contribution towards the sales pipeline. So marketing's contribution to the sales pipeline is absolutely measured. We don't do that in recruitment yet.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed. How are you seeing successful companies implement that switch? Because I've been asked to do very similar things, but a lot of the time you end up reporting back clicks and likes and shares, which are vanity metrics, realistically. You're reporting back to how many probably of your internal employees have liked things that you've posted, which in turn is irrelevant. You know, it doesn't really matter if everybody who works for you likes what you say, because they should. But how can you switch that and start talking about numbers that are really important? Because a lot of marketers, I don't think in recruitment, actually know, because nobody's ever taught them.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right about, you go to the CEO and say, look, your tweets on average are getting 15 likes. This time last year, they were getting none. And those 15 likes are all people in the business. It's 15 of the 50 people that you've asked to go and like it have done it. So yeah, I understand that. It's about being able to not just track who's clicked on those things, but it's about linking that to what's generated sales leads from potential customers and what has generated new candidates or reactivating candidates who were previously cold. So this is why I think about things in terms of pipelines, because if you can put a points system in place whereby you're measuring each individual's engagement with your business based on their interactions, and you can actually see where they are in a pipeline based on they've not been doing anything, or they have been opening your emails, they've been looking at your website, they've been looking at your pricing page, or your job descriptions in the case of candidates. If you can monitor all of that activity and you can automatically track it all, then you can really visualize what does my pipeline look like, so that when a company comes to you and says, what's your pipeline for Java developers based in London, you're able to say, not, well, we've got 4,000 on the database. You can say, we've got 4,000 on the database, 3,000 of which don't appear to be interested in opportunities today. Of the other 1,000, we know that 600 of them would be open to a conversation, 400 of them are interested in job opportunities, of which 70 of those would be interested in your business, then that's very, very powerful. So I think marketing takes over 2/3 of the candidate and client pipeline because you're able to track and score what each person's doing. That means that recruiters are spending their valuable human time talking to warm clients and warm candidate leads, instead of spending 80% of their time sending in mails to people cold and leaving messages on people's answering machines that go unreturned. I really want to eliminate that. There's two big problems in recruitment for me. One is contingency recruitment generally, and the other is the amount of time that recruiters are spend cold contacting people. It's fruitless in comparison to what it was 20 years ago, so we need to stop doing it.
Well, nobody picks up the phone anymore to a number they don't know. I don't even do it, and sometimes it's a colleague. The marketers need to start standing up for themselves a little bit and commanding that their job role can be a profit centre, not just a make things pretty centre, which it isn't anymore, but can be seen as. You have said this before, that if you can't get that where you are now, maybe it's time to look for an opportunity somewhere else. But actually, what happens if you can do it where you are? How do you start that conversation? What do you even say?
It's all about whoever your boss is. So if your boss is the owner of the company or is the CEO of the business, then I look around a lot of recruitment businesses today, and it's typically people that are kind of my age who are the boss of the business. And as if I'm 42, there's a lot of people who started in recruitment like me at the late 90s, and they're doing things the way that they did them then, and they're training their teams to do things in the way that made them successful
10 years ago.
In the late 90s and going into the early noughties. And so if you've got an open-minded, kind of progressive type of person that's running the business, that's going to make a massive difference. So if they are open-minded and progressive, then basically get them to listen to this.
Send this to them.
Yeah.
Send Glenn's to them and say, listen to both of these.
Yeah.
And when you're finished, come back to me and tell me what I should be doing.
My first question for somebody like that would be, why do you think it's acceptable that your recruiters are spending 60% of their time leaving messages on people's answering machines and not spending 60% of their time having warm conversations with people that they've been served by marketing and automation? In most other industries, that's not a good statistic. Doing 50 calls a day is not something to be pleased with. I couldn't do 50 calls a day. In my job, I probably do about 8 calls a day, but every single one of them is qualified and it's a valuable meeting or valuable call. 50 a day would be a massive waste of time for me.
I remember leaderboards of 200, 250 calls a day, and that person's praised for it, but then you wonder how many people answered the phone. And quality, quantity can bring some fruit at the end of it. Yes, I understand that the more of it you do, the more that can come out of it. But what happens if the more of it you do is already qualified, like you say, every conversation is then beneficial to the business. Marketers talk about candidate experience, but half the time it's mostly how quickly did they get from homepage of the site to application.
Yeah.
That is one tiny piece of how the touch points that you've actually had with them. How did they get to the site? What happened once they were there?
Mm.
What happens once their application go into an inbox, or did it go into your database?
Mm.
So how many of them were missed? And it's really people learning what they can do to plug all those things together rather than independently posting to social media, updating a website page, and maybe updating a database if they have some automated email that goes through it. If you connect all three, which comes back in some respect to your crawl, walk, run analogy, you will create a proper marketing ecosystem where you are in control. Again, the engine room that everyone's starting to talk about, that phrase is being used more and more, profit center, engine room, how much marketing can be of benefit. Can you go through that crawl, walk, run for me?
Yeah, if I was influencing my organization, if I'm a marketing manager for a recruitment business, I mean, I'm going to start by looking at what we're doing today that's not being measured and working out ways to measure the effectiveness of everything we're doing. It's all about data. I know a lot of people talk about data and they're not quite sure actually what it means, or they listen to people talking about data, not quite sure about what it means. But data should inform us on the best way to do absolutely everything, because you can see what's not worked, and it's mostly what's not worked. you can see, stop doing it. Whatever's worked, do it more, do it a lot. And then as you begin to identify things that are working better than that, do that and do it more and continue to drop things that are not delivering as much. So I think the first step is to look at what are we doing today that we're not measuring and we don't know what's working. There's a very famous phrase in advertising, which is, I think it's attributed to Conrad Hilton, the founder of Hilton Hotels. I know that 50% of my advertising is working. I just don't know which 50%, because you can measure it.
Well,
so
yeah, then you couldn't.
Exactly. You absolutely couldn't. But today you definitely can. So measuring everything that you're currently doing, dropping the things that are not working, doing more of the things that are working, that's the first step. The second step would be to go and learn about performance marketing. Just Google it, performance marketing, and look for case studies and how it's working in other industries. And then take all of the best applications from other industries and adopt them. And then I think the third thing, once you're running, start freestyling it. And what I mean by that is, once you've got to the point where you've taken lots of learnings from other businesses and other industries, start doing things that are creative and start doing things that are unique to your organization. Start creating experiences for customers and for candidates that is unique to your organization as well. We do tend to look at other businesses and our benchmark is being as good as them, when I think we need to go beyond that and we need to really stop looking at what other people are doing, realize we're doing it as good as everybody else is, and then work out how do I continue to get, you know, better and really break new boundaries.
Recruitment industry probably doesn't break those boundaries very often though. One of the reasons I started this podcast was that not just marketers, but a lot of the recruitment industry don't communicate well enough. We can only have an upward trajectory in some respect if we start learning to do things better at roughly the same speed. Yes, it's still a competitive market, they all are, but if we're all learning one by one to improve, we're going to improve over an incredibly long period of time, especially if there's 40,000 recruitment businesses. We're talking to each other a little bit about how systems and progress and departments can improve. We can do it as an industry, and things like cold calling, things that people really do hate about what makes recruiters, you know, talked about over dinner as being the worst kind of salespeople, will be eradicated faster because it won't be necessary in the industry anymore. You won't have people teaching that legacy backwards.
Well, okay, two things about that. The first is the reason for the limited knowledge sharing goes back a long time. So when I started in recruitment, this is a true story. I remember being in all bar one on Moorgate with a couple of my colleagues, and some people from Michael Page walked in. They were like the arch nemesis, arch competitor. And I actually got told, right, drink up, we're leaving. And we got up and left because the competition walked in. I think we had a couple of customers maybe with us or something like that. And we didn't want any kind of contamination, right?
Okay.
So I think it's also because we're in a world where confidentiality is really important. Client confidentiality, candidate confidentiality is really important. So you can't have information going from one business to another business. We're also in a world where, you know, recruiters are highly, highly competitive. I'm absolutely the same. And you don't want to give anybody anything that's going to help them at your expense. This comes back to what I mentioned about contingency recruitment. It's like this hell race. The company signs off the job, sends out the job description to 7 different organizations, and then there's a race. One person's going to get a fee. That's it. 7 people are going to get, 6 people are going to get nothing. So we're in a fiercely competitive world. And I do think there's probably recruitment businesses where the founder or the CEO will not want their marketing people going and networking with their peers. And that's a real shame, because what you just said is important. As an industry, we should be looking to, you know, raise standards and get better. And the other thing you said was about this notion that recruiters are the worst type of salespeople. There's reasons for that. That's not just the recruiter's fault. And that, again, comes back to contingency recruitment. The hiring manager has no incentive to give the HR team any feedback. They've got no incentive to give the recruiter any feedback. The recruiter doesn't have any feedback to give to the candidate. So what's the point in calling them to say, I've got nothing to tell you?
Say, sorry, they won't tell me anything.
Exactly. And actually, there's no contract from the candidate to the recruiter either. So they've got no incentive to tell the recruiter, that company you sent me out to, they've actually hired me and I'm on a 3-month contract with them and I start on Monday. That happens as well. So, you know, nobody has any contract in here. Nobody's got any tie. I'm going off subject a little bit here, but these are all important things to realize about the recruitment world. So I think there's some, I mean, I know some people that have some influence at UK government level around all of this, and I know that they're actively looking at changing the system and changing the way that employers interact with recruitment businesses. So we should be sharing more. definitely. But looking outside of recruitment, there's other industries that are as bad or worse at marketing. But the other thing about recruiters is I really believe if marketing is serving them with hot client leads, hot candidate leads, they're spending 15% of their time reaching out to people to try and get a conversation rather than 60% or whatever they do today, they're going to develop more skills around being talent consultants, proper consultants, rather than salespeople. And I think that would be a real big win for the industry as a whole.
Very likely was the original aim. You know, they were called recruitment consultants, not salespeople, which is in essence the point, is you are supposed to be able to have the time to consult on the market, on the industry, what you know. And some of the best recruiters out there can do that and do the cold calling at the same time. But the odds are they know their industry so well that they've taken a tiny space of the industry and understood it and understand everybody in it, that they don't need that. But for everybody else who doesn't have that opportunity, or actually they've got thousands of competitors, if you can be served warm leads. And I do wonder how much of the industry and the marketing professionals really understand what warm leads look like to consultants when they don't get to see that. They probably haven't or hadn't had much exposure to that because it is events and social media and websites and all that kind of thing. How do you qualify warm leads to clients to say that this is what you'll be able to give?
If you can see that the HR manager at Lloyds Banking Group came onto your, opened an email from you, clicked on a link from that email, went to a landing page which was about interview skills, then went from there onto your website and looked at your pricing page, to me, that combination of activities should immediately trigger an alert to a recruiter to say, go and talk to John Smith at Lloyds Banking Group.
He's definitely hiring.
And interested in how much it would cost to use your business. But if a recruiter is able to see that candidate, Sarah Green, opened your email, clicked on a link to look at skills for finance managers, then 1 week later, went back to the email, clicked on the link again, went to the same landing page, and then clicked from there to job opportunities for finance managers on your website. The recruiter gets that alert. That combination of activities should trigger an alert straight to the recruiter. So those are the kinds of things which recruiters that are in businesses taking a more marketing automation kind of approach, they're getting served leads like that every single day. Like 8:30 every morning, they're getting an email with, here's your 4 client leads today and here's your 6 candidate leads today, based on what people have been doing around your content. That kind of gold dust information means that those individuals have got 10 actions that day. Talk to those 4 customers, talk to those 6 potential candidates, fill the jobs.
And that's the disconnect at the moment. Most of us have Hootsuite, MailChimp, somebody else looks after their website, totally different database, nothing is connected. Everything serves individual purposes, but nothing creates a holistic view of what other people are doing within that ecosystem. And tools like yours can help build that connect and that understanding of what really cycle is. I think a lot of people end up trying to chase or connect all these tools together, when actually there are other solutions that, for the marketer anyway, less hard work. You plug something in that connects your ecosystem together, you deliver, and it's not communicated to the industry, I don't think. It's not communicated to marketers that that's possible. And very likely, a lot of business leaders are so worried about KPIs, they haven't stepped back and said, well, why are we making 100 calls a day and only one has brought us something productive, when we could have made 10 today and they were set up before the consultant walked in the building, knowing what they could do that day to add value directly to the business. I hope it changes the industry immediately, I can say that. I don't think anybody has really clocked on in some respects, especially maybe in bigger agencies too. It's like turning a tanker in any of the big agencies, and I can understand how that would be very hard to implement. But if smaller agencies start doing it now, they'll be picking at their heels a lot faster than you can understand. Obviously, apart from automation and this kind of technology, what do you think will be other progressive steps in marketing for recruitment?
Forget about the transaction. The transaction being what I just talked about, which is when you get the hot leads, you know who to talk to, you talk to and you go and do the deal, right? From marketing and from the agency's perspective, stop thinking about those transactions as being the most important thing and think about, what have you got to do to be generating all those signals? And for me, it's about adding value to clients' and candidates' lives during the periods of time that they're not hiring and they're not looking for a job. So for me, according to LinkedIn, 80% of people are not looking for a job. They don't care about the job descriptions you've got. They're not interested in that. And they're not interested in why they should work with your agency when they are looking for a job. Again, they don't care about that. They naturally want an ephemeral relationship with your business, which is they'll come and talk to you maybe every 2 years when they're thinking about making a move. But what you really need to think about is, how do we continue to maintain relationships with those people during that 2 year period between making job moves? And how you do that is by being useful, being relevant, being seen as a source or as a resource for people's careers, not just at the point where they're looking for a job. So skills, industry insights, a very simple example would be things like salary surveys, right? And that's about as far as most organizations go in actually adding value back to their clients and candidates. Recruiters are interviewing candidates every day. They get insights from those candidates every day. Collate those insights and turn them into regular thought leadership pieces. Turn them into blogs. Turn them into short videos. Send those to candidates. I had a great interview this morning with this person who's doing some work around this and this, and they believe that the next step for their career is moving into this new thing, whatever it might be. Okay? You don't breach any confidentiality by not saying the person's name or who they work for or anything else, but other people will sit and listen to that and go, yeah, I need to be thinking about that as a way to move my career as well. Exactly. So it's being useful and relevant between periods of recruiting and between periods of job seeking is, to me, the biggest thing. Communities, what that is about an education program. I think education is really important. So that's about an education program. But if you can place your education program in an environment that you control, a community, I mean, it may be a Facebook group, it may be a LinkedIn group, it may be something like that. But ideally, it's somewhere different that those people are logging in. They've got an app and there's a Q&A board on there, there's discussions on there, there's other resources on there, it's full of career-related information. You know, something like that, that's even better because you just get to see so much of the candidate's interactions. And you
kind of lead them to it almost, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't have to interact at every point to get the information.
They don't want to talk to you.
No, they want to talk to each other, but they don't want to talk to a recruiter every day like they're being picked or sold to.
That's it. But you get the brand benefit of hosting something like that, but they don't want to talk to you. Clients don't want to talk to recruiters until they're ready to use them to work on a vacancy. But that doesn't mean they don't want to interact with your content if it's going to be useful and relevant, especially on the train, on the way to work. People often are looking at what's interesting content in their inbox at that point. You know, get some inspiration for the day ahead. Yeah. So being useful, being relevant, sharing things without asking for anything in return, and ideally turning it into community whereby it's almost like a cocktail party, but it's online.
And you made an interesting point about thought leadership. It doesn't have to be a 200-page white paper that goes into incredible amounts of detail of the industry. You can do that, but snippets, 2 or 3 sentences, a paragraph, digestible information that is shared every day, is quick to release and create, and it doesn't take all of that time that it does to print a book, and the moment it lands it's also out of date. So it's a kind of understanding what content you need, and short and small amounts to hook in people are actually enough sometimes.
People often say to me, I don't really have enough to say to be sharing stuff regularly on social media. I say to them, how many interviews have you done today? I've done 3 candidate interviews. Tell me what you learned from the first one. And they'll tell me some interesting insight. There you go, that's your first one. Tell me about the next
Post
interview.
That online.
Exactly.
I don't think that is a huge piece as well, is that marketing need to go out and educate consultants on how to talk online properly. Not, I have a new mandate, I have a new job, this, that, and the other. Not self-serving, but sharing information that starts a conversation. Open up the floor to other people. Discussion is better than a statement anyway. You could be wrong, it's fine. I say things that are wrong sometimes just so someone else will disagree.
Yeah.
And start that conversation.
So do I.
Exactly. but that's also half the fun of it. And slowly, I think recruiters will realise that kind of content, a couple of years ago, just sharing company posts worked. Now it doesn't anymore. Share an insight, share something you know, and people will continue to come back to you for more. But it is also consistency. You can't do it once and expect everyone to come. You've got to do it for 3 months and people will start to understand that you are doing this and knowing what you're talking about to some respect.
That's a really, really vital lesson. Before we became a technology company, we did a lot of training with teams around how to use social media and how to use it for marketing and how to generate a lot of engagement engagement. And the amount of people who would message me 2 weeks later and say, I haven't got any new work from this yet. It's not working. I don't think it's going to work for me. And I'm like, you've been doing this for 2 weeks. You're basically at the finding your voice stage.
Yeah, and you'll be lucky to have found it.
Absolutely. You haven't found it in 2 weeks. After 2 months, you've probably found what works for you. After 4 months, if you're getting no traction, you need to work on it harder.
Yeah, you need to bring someone in.
So yeah, you need to do something about it. But 2 weeks, no, forget about it. You wouldn't expect, if you've had results in 2 weeks, that's been a fluke.
Or you really do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, or you're in that duck to water. You could be, absolutely.
Exactly, but you don't. Marketing do know how to do that, and they can educate a team on how to do that, but they're not. They're just saying, well, posting new mandate is wrong. That's great, yes, it's wrong, but you do actually need to go and tell them what's right. Help consultants, and if you've got one marketer to 500 consultants, okay, fine, you're not going to do it one by one. Find the people that are interested. You might get 100. Out of those 100, maybe 50 will follow through. And of those 50, maybe 10 will be consistent with it. And those are the 10 that you focus your time on. People will come when they realise, but the ones who are invested are the ones you invest your time in and start to change that.
As you said, that occurred to me that not in recruitment businesses, you know, we're an opinionated industry. You know, individuals have got lots of opinions. And non-marketing business leaders review social media and have an immediate opinion on it, and they think that what they like is what everybody should like, and what they don't like is what everybody should not like, and that's wrong. It's just wrong. Yeah. So a lot of the things that I put online, they're not actually necessarily reflective of the kind of things that I would maybe actually watch or listen to or read, but I know that they generate more interaction than the things that I maybe would be more inclined to do. So it's not about what you like, it's about what works that's important.
I'm going to say that is the perfect point to end on. Thank you very much, Adam.
Thanks for having me.